Let's back up and look at his personal life and see some elements that come along with the concern for God's honor. And then let's focus on that honor and then make our way home. Because right alongside of this motivation for God's honor comes, in verse 15, his humility starkly showing. Look at verse 15. But David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock in Bethlehem. Do you know why God could use this guy? It never went to his head. Never. Here's the anointed one who's going to be the future king, and he doesn't put up signs and bells and whistles. He just goes back to the sheep. Now he gets a secondary role. He becomes the personal attaché to the king. Not only is he going to be the next king, but this guy is one of the most intimate with the king, who's in his chamber playing him music when he's depressed. Now talk about a springboard for a high political office. David had it all wound up there. He was the most vital man to King Saul. Not only was he going to be the next king, but he had the most intimate position. Remember, whoever had the king's ear had it made. But yet, when Saul got done with him, David would go back and forth and tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. That is just unabashed humility. It's amazing. And the Philistine came forward, verse 16, morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. Now, if that doesn't ring bells, 40 days, 40 days, 40 nights, 40 days, 40 nights. Remember, testing. And while God is refining this humble little servant, totally unawares of, David must have not known about this, because he kind of comes into the situation and just gets all riled up on the spot. So nobody must have been telling him what was going on. He was going back and forth, and he couldn't figure out why Saul was so depressed. How would you like to be the king of an army and not be willing to lead them? You catch the picture? Who was supposed to go out and meet Goliath? Who do you think? Well, Saul. He was the tallest guy in Israel. He was the king. He was sitting in his tent, taking Valium by way of a harp to calm his nerves. And then David comes. Look at verse 20, because another element of his life, not only was he humble, but in verse 20 we see he was disciplined. Those two things sometimes and often go hand in hand. His dad, and he didn't sleep in and say, well, listen, this is the personal assistant to the king. I'm going to sleep in. I've really had a hard life. But David arose early in the morning. Another interesting element, look what it says in verse 20. He left the flock with a keeper. He didn't have any oversized view of himself. He didn't say, I'm doing the king's business. Somebody else take care of the little details. He left the flock with a keeper. You see, he looked on the sheep as a very vital assignment. Here was the guy that was going to shepherd God's flock, Israel. He learned how to take care of a little group of dirty sheep. And he took the supplies and went as Jesse commanded him. And then in verse 23, we find the first time he gets exposed to this blasphemy. And while he was talking with them, because see, he took the baggage and passed it out and got everything taken care of like his disciplined life did. And while he was talking with them, it happened to be the time of the day that old Big Shot came out to yell from the valley floor upward. And like a natural amphitheater, his voice would go right up to where the Israelites were. And this 10-foot-high megaphone started yelling. And the Philistine from Gath named Goliath was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words. And David heard them. And look, this would make a great video, because when all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. And there's David just standing there listening, and he can't believe his ears. And then, of course, he sees things from God's perspective. But look at verse 28, because I want you to see the price that you have to pay for humility. And I was telling you, he had a hard time in his family. It really comes clear right here. Verse 28. Now Eliab, his older brother, heard that he spoke to the men. Remember what David said? David said, how can this guy talk like that to the armies of the living God? That's kind of a blunt statement. And his older brother was just cut to the heart. He was so jealous of David. And he spoke to the men. And David stood up for God. And Eliab's anger burned against David. Now, isn't that the way? It's even like that in the church. Someone will get up and they'll say something in great enthusiasm for the Lord. And instead of everybody saying, "That's right," they go, "Too spiritual," or whatever. And they burned against David. His anger burned. And he said, "Why have you come down here? And with whom have you left?" Now listen to this. This is the typical cutting words. Remember Ephesians 4:29, "Let no cutting or corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth." Listen to the daggers of this older brother. "And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?" Not only are you a shepherd, you only have a few. Anybody could do that. "I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." Now that makes me chuckle. What battle? They're all hiding. And they're all afraid to death of one guy. And David said, now this is so sweet, "No anger, no vengeance, humility." And he just asked, "What have I done now?" Right? You ever been the youngest? I was the youngest. "What have I done now?" You know, sisters go running off. "Ah! What have I done now?" Was it not a just question? And then I love this. Resolute, undaunted, verse 30. And he turned away from him, his brother. He just looked at him and said, "What have I done now? I haven't done anything wrong." And he was undaunted. And he turned to another and said the same thing. And the people answered the same thing as before. Well, real quickly. Finally, David gets up in verse 32 to Saul. And he said, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And that's what's so amazing about somebody that God has their attention. If they see something that needs to be done, they know God can do it, and they know they can't. And so it's a perfect situation for God to show his power strong. And David just said, "Whew, if this guy's condemning and speaking against God, I'm going to go if no one else will go." And of course, his heart was burdened, and he was the man God chose. And Saul said to David, verse 32, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You are but a youth. He has been a warrior from his youth." And David said to Saul, and by the way, David wasn't old enough to fight in the army yet, so we know he was less than 20. Remember, you couldn't be a priest till you're 25, you couldn't fight in the army till you're 20, and you couldn't be up there, you couldn't be a Levite till you're 25, and you couldn't even be a priest till you were 30. So David was a youngster, a teenager here, and a little fella. And David said to Saul, and here's the next element of his life. Remember, he was humble in verse 15. He was disciplined in verse 20. He saw things from God's perspective in verse 26. And I would exhort all of you to think about any situation, whether it be here in the church or anywhere else, from God's perspective. And then he was willing to pay a price in verse 28 for his servanthood. And that, of course, is criticism. And then, of course, he wasn't angry. He wasn't full of vengeance in verse 29. And he was undaunted for God's name in verse 30. He was an encourager in verse 32. He says, "Come on, Saul, don't get discouraged." But look at verse 34, because another critical element of his life shows up. He magnified God's hand in his life. In other words, he was vitally, livingly aware of God's unceasing hand in his life, moving and shaping and transforming him. And David said to Saul, verse 34, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep." Ring, ring, ring. Humble, humble, humble. He doesn't even say "my sheep." He doesn't lay claim. You notice this guy, he is the perfect example of humility. He doesn't lay hold of anything. All the accolades that come at him, he has no sticky fingers. They go right by him. Even in the most bland way, he's humble. "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him, attacked him, and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me," now talk about fearlessness. I can't imagine this. "I took him by his beard, struck him, and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear." And now listen, what a transition. What a beautiful illustration that just gripped Saul's mind. I'm sure Saul had never fought hand-to-hand combat with a lion. And here's David, And he's telling this great story, and all of a sudden Saul's probably ready to give him the Purple Heart Medal, and he immediately changes into the whole purpose that he said this, and he said this, "Your servant killed both lion and bear," verse 36, "and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." You see that? He comes right back. He said the same thing up there in verse 26 at the end. David had a one-track mind. He said, "I don't care about myself. I don't care about what my brothers think about me. I don't care if I have the most menial job in the world." He said, "I am concerned about God's name, God's honor." And David said, and he's magnifying God. I don't think God had been mentioned lately around there. They were talking about the Philistines. They were all in the negative mode, and everything was kind of imploding, not exploding as God conquered, kind of falling in on them. And David said, "The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." He must have been convincing, because look at what Saul said. And Saul said to David, "Go." And it's kind of a strange thing to hear this coming out of his mouth. "May the Lord be with you." I'm sure he kind of was startled because he didn't usually talk too much about the Lord. In fact, when he really got into a bind, he went to see a demonic medium. That's where his strength lay. Verse 38, "And Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head and clothed him with armor. And David girded up his sword over his armor and tried to walk." Isn't that cute? "For he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, 'I can't go out with these. I haven't tested them.'" In other words, he says, "I can't even make it. It's too much. It's clumsy. It's in the way." And David took them off. And he took his stick in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook. And just a humorous aside, the Israeli government comes on a weekly basis with a dump truck. And in the brook in the Valley of Elah, they dump an entire dump truck load of smooth stones. And all week long, tour buses of pilgrims stop by, and everyone takes home to America 5 smooth stones. Every trip, I've always brought my children 5 smooth stones. And every time I go there, there's always more smooth stones. That's just one of the things. I hope it doesn't diminish your love for the Holy Land. But I will tell you that in this time, there were real, genuine smooth stones. And David reached down. He took 5 of them from the brook. He put them in his shepherd's bag, which he had, even his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistines. And you know the sling was a long cord with a little pocket in it, just a long apparatus. It wasn't any one of these kind of shooting things. And he took that thing, and he had often been probably standing out and practicing while he was watching his sheep. And it says that in this era that they could sling these stones within a hair's breadth. And they would go and they'd actually knock down city walls with slingshots because they would just keep whacking the wall with a high-powered, high-velocity rock. And if they kept hitting and pummeling that wall, they would break it down, as we saw in some of the events in the book of Judges. But David took his little stones, his little sling, and his little pouch. And here comes the meeting. "And then the Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him." Now, one little kid is coming out, and here comes the tank with an escort, no less, with his shield bearer, because, you know, Goliath was too big to carry his shield. He had all of his other equipment, and he was kind of walking along, and you see him ambling down, and here's his shield bearer in front of him. And the Philistine looked and saw David. He disdained him, for he was but a youth, and on top of that, he was ruddy. How would you like to be ruddy? With a handsome appearance, and the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" Here's David with his shepherd's staff, and his little bulging little pocket with 5 little stones in it, and his little leather sling. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the beasts of the field." And then, of course, David's invincible motivation clicks in. He looks up at that guy and he said, "You can come, Mr. Tank, with your sword and your shield and your javelin and your spear, but I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord of hosts,
the God of the armies of Israel. And that's what I'm concerned about, because you've taunted him. And I'm not going to let you do that anymore, because this day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'm going to wipe you out. I'm going to cut your head off. And the armies that follow you, for one reason, because David's singular motivation was he wanted to magnify God's name in all the earth. He wanted everybody to know, everywhere, that in the midst of all the confusion and all the false gods and all the fearful followers of the true God, that God was still alive, even if he wasn't showing up too much that way in the lives of his people. And all the assembly would know that the Lord doesn't deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into his hands. Well, what's the secret of being after God's own heart? I think it's very easily distilled into one little thought. It's being entirely motivated and concerned and consumed with God's honor. In fact, if you want to check that up, read sometime what Nathan said when he confronted David at his darkest hour. Nathan didn't say, "You murderer." He didn't say, "You adulterer." You know what he said? He said, "You've caused the enemies of the Lord to reproach God. You have made people not honor God." Because David's whole life was involved consummately with honoring God's name. Just ask you one closing question. What motivates you? What is the consuming passion of our lives? What in the world are we living for?